One really interesting area is the work that's being done by the Law Commission. They've done some work around property rights when it comes to digital assets. Sarah Green and her team have been asking the question of whether you can have a property right with a digital asset. And the consultation that they put out has proposed a new third type of asset class, which is much more nuanced and appropriate to digital assets. And I think it's down to that work and others that the UK is really seen as a leader when it comes to setting the global standard for law in this space.
Hello and welcome back to the Women of Web3 podcast. I'm Lauren Ingram and I'm the founder of Women of Web3. We're a community and a consultancy, and we've been educating thousands of women about Web3 and sharing jobs, events and learning resources like this podcast. In every episode, I'll be interviewing an incredible leader about their learnings. We start off by breaking down the Web3 jargon, then we head deeper down the rabbit hole. Please do subscribe and give us a rating. It really helps more people find the podcast. Now, you're probably listening to this podcast because you want to learn about Web3, but have you ever considered how to actually use it in your job? At MDRX, they build digital products using Web3, blockchain, machine learning, and AI, but with purpose as the foundation, never just tech for tech's sake. So why not download their cheat sheet? It's packed with top tips on why your business should give a damn about Web3 and see whether Web3 is actually right for you in your job, your business, or even your career. So whether you're looking to optimize your business strategy or leverage tech to stay ahead of the competition, MDRX have got you covered. I'm really excited to be working with them because they live and breathe Web3, and I love that they see tech as an enabler and not as the end goal. And because they're the tech consultancy arm of law firm Mishkonda Rea Group, they know everything there is to know about the legalities of Web3. And if you've ever tried to launch a legally compliant NFT project, DAO, anything like that, you'll know it's really complex and you need a trusted partner. Go and download their cheat sheet now by clicking on the link in the description. Today is a special episode, as it's with our partners at MDRX, so specifically Sian Rodway. She's their chief operating officer. Sian's background is that she spent 7 years as a consultant and now leads operations for MDRX. They're part of the Mishkonda Rea Group, which is a legal firm. And if you were listening carefully to the sponsor message, you would know that already. We're going to hear from Sian about how they consult in Web3, including not just offering blockchain for the sake of it, and also what kind of questions that clients are asking around all things AI as well as Web3. We'll also dive into what kind of jobs and skills are in demand in the Web3 space, which is, of course, ever-changing. So without further ado, here's Sian. Welcome to the show, Sian. This feels really exciting to be interviewing you because you're from MDRX, you're our lead sponsors. I promise I'll be on best behaviour. So just to start off, could you tell me who you are and what you do?
Yes, so I am Sian Rodway. I'm COO of MDRX, lead sponsor for Women of Web3. and my role is pretty broad, as you can imagine, in a fast-growing consultancy. But the most exciting bit is overseeing MDRX's consulting business and all of our client projects.
Amazing. Now, I know you know the format, which is that we always start off with a jargon buster. People seem to really value that in season one. So how would you describe a rug pull for absolute beginners?
I'm really glad you gave me this one, not least because I actually think it's quite memorable in that it kind of is what it says in the tin. If you know the saying, having the rug pulled out from under your feet, that is what rug pull is. Referring to. So sadly, there have been events where DeFi projects suddenly get abandoned after having raised sometimes very significant funds from investors, and the team behind the project exit with those funds and the project plummets in value or sometimes even becomes worthless. So not a great situation, but like I said, at least a bit of jargon that is quite easy to remember because it's sort of linked to a saying that we're all familiar with.
It is a brutal one, but thank you for that one. So you're obviously now chief operating officer at MDRX, and before that you spent 7 years as a consultant. So will you tell me a bit about your career so far and what's motivated your choices?
Yeah, definitely. So I started my career in international development and then in defence and security. So that doesn't really scream Web3. But I was drawn to working in that sector because what gets me out of bed in the morning is having an impact on others and feeling like I'm leaving a legacy in the work that I'm doing. And actually, I found that that's where consulting is a great industry to work in too. You can work with organizations for short periods of time and have an impact on those organizations and then leave and move on to a next a new business or a new challenge. And then through my career, I guess I've done that in lots of different guises. So I've done a lot of strategy work, business design, delivery management, product development. I've worked a lot with data and analytics teams. So basically did a bit of everything. And that, I guess, really enabled me working with so many different teams on so many different types of problems to now transfer those into my leadership role helping to grow, build, manage MDRX.
Amazing. So when you joined, did you get the overwhelm? Were you already familiar with Web3? Sort of, if you're starting leading a consultancy that sort of works in, you know, Web3, blockchain, metaverse, etc., did you have to kind of do like a deep dive? Did you get the overwhelm when learning about this stuff?
I love that you referred to it as the overwhelm. And people talk to me about that a lot. I guess I was lucky in that I was familiar with the technologies, especially in terms of the metaverse. The clients I've been working with previously were interested in that space. I'd worked on projects where we had created sort of virtual reality environments for training situations. So I would say I was familiar with it. I think that the Web3 environment, though, you can get the overwhelm with it quite easily. And it almost, the community traditionally, I think, controversial point here, enjoys that. It likes to sort of make itself feel a bit closed off. I mean, we refer to enthusiasts in this space as crypto bros. I'm certainly not a bro, so I immediately didn't feel that I could access the space in the way that I could with other technologies. So what I really focused on to make sure I didn't get that overwhelm was where I could see these technologies being used, and starting my point of learning from the application of the technology rather from trying to understand the mechanics. And I think that has also been something that is far more, is getting easier to find, because I think when I was first looking in this space, there was a lot of projects and ideas that probably didn't have that much grounding in a real world application or utility. But now I think you can see that a lot more in the projects and the evolution of how the technology is being used. And that's really useful for people like me, who I think looks at these problems through a business lens and how they can enable businesses to either find new revenue streams or use it as a way to find efficiencies and improve their bottom line.
Super interesting. And I think you're spot on about the fact that you don't necessarily need to know all of the mechanics of this stuff. And I think a lot of people, and maybe more so women, or at least that's what we're hearing from women in our community, is they're like, A, I'm not technical, or B, I'm never going to sort of fully understand exactly how blockchain works, or like what's the difference between a layer one and layer two. But actually, for most of what you might want to do, especially as a consumer rather than running a business, you don't need to know that stuff. And actually, even a lot of, you know, say you're a project manager in a Web3 startup, you still, lots of this stuff you won't necessarily need to know. In the same way as, like, you know, I used to work at Facebook, but I don't know exactly the secret sauce of the algorithm. And, like, you know, generally, we don't know how the internet works from sort of nuts and bolts level. We don't know how apps on our phone work, but we definitely care about the applications of it, of like, what can you actually do with this technology, with the software? So so I think you're spot on. I think it's actually something we need to kind of keep reminding people, is like, don't worry too much about the detail. Like, what does it enable?
Exactly. And I think that we see that much more, like you've just alluded to, in the Web3 space than we do with other technologies. Because, like you say, Web2, people aren't worried about the mechanics of the internet when they're using the internet. But in Web3, we're almost guilted into thinking, well, do you not understand layer one, two, three protocols? Which are you using? And I think that immediately turns people off in terms of feeling like they can understand it. I also think that building an understanding of those things isn't as difficult as some people will make out. I think that can build a base level understanding of those things. There's great resources available. And if you are running a business, if you're a project manager in a business, I have no doubt that you have the capacity to understand some of those things.
Totally agree. So what does your job actually entail, like day to day? I'm sure it varies a lot, but what kind of projects would you typically work on?
Yeah, so in my role, I'm accountable for the success of our project. So I work really across the board in MDRX and make sure that all of our projects are running smoothly and how we're delivering our projects is continuously improving. But when it comes to what those projects are, our work typically falls into three categories. So we have strategy projects. That's where we're working with businesses to understand what they want to achieve, why they might use these technologies, and then really importantly, how they can implement their strategies. I would hate for MDRX to be seen as another consultancy who produces a strategy document that lives on a shelf. We produce strategy documents that live in the business. You know, they can be implemented, and that actually leads on really nicely to our second big area of work, which is around actually building the solution. So we've got teams of software engineers, blockchain engineers, data scientists, all of whom can turn those strategic goals of businesses into new products, new services, and things that enhance the businesses of our clients. Finally, we do also work in business transformation. So we have some projects where we are not necessarily building a new product, but we're working with businesses to enhance the capabilities that they've got. Sometimes that's internally and improving the systems they've got to run their own business. And other times it is consumer facing. So helping them to provide better services to existing customers. I'll give you an example. We've got a really exciting project called Heroes, which is allowing people in the film and television industry to manage their rights more effectively using smart contracts and gain the ability to be rewarded fairly for their work, which I was certainly surprised doesn't happen enough in the film and television industry.
Is that more US-based? Because I know things are sort of run differently there. Is that a US-based client?
No, they're a UK-based client. But obviously the stakeholders when it comes to creating film or television shows can be global. So it needs to be something that can, accommodate users across the world.
And so which part of that do you actually kind of get involved in? So you said there was parts of your business are sort of, here's a strategy, we can execute it, and also the sort of digital transformation piece. But like with Heroes, which part did you offer?
So that was certainly falling in the build solution part. So we started with a discovery for the project. We spent some time understanding who their users were, what the problem was, and testing that that was a real problem in the market, making sure that if we were to build a solution, it would succeed for the client. That phase of work results in us being able to sort of spec out a build for MVP, which is now in progress, and we're developing that ready to be launched later this year.
That sounds really cool. But how do you test that the market wants something or will use something? Because I think Web3 often has the issue of it's like a solution looking for a problem. So how do you know that people will actually take the stuff up?
Yeah, and so there's lots of ways that we can do that in the discovery part of the project. One way is finding users and speaking to them. So that's one way that we test the market. There's obviously a huge amount of market research we can do, understanding the size of the market, understanding what current competitors or services offer in this space, and does the business have a unique advantage over those to enable those users to adopt this product rather than other products are available. So it's a real mix of sort of business analysis tools and techniques, working with users, working with experts in the industry to test that market out.
And then for the build, what type of coding languages would you typically be using?
So on this project, and typically we're using Solidity for the smart contracts. What I would say about that, because I know you've got some listeners who might want to get into coding or working in this space, it really builds on JavaScript. And there are loads of great coding boot camps and opportunities to learn JavaScript out there. I think if you go looking for opportunities to learn Solidity, it's harder if you aren't already a developer, which many women are not. But we're seeing a lot of career switches coming into the space. So we would recommend that if you are interested in coding in this space, or you know, if you're looking for a role potentially in the future, MDRX, then having a great grasp of JavaScript and the appetite to learn Solidity, yeah, that's the most common language we use. We're pretty tech agnostic. Some of our block engineers are familiar with using Rust as well, which has got some advantages. But I don't think that I think for our smart contracts, Solidity is usually our preference.
That part gets out of my comfort zone because I'm not from a technical background. I don't code. I also keep telling women that like you don't need to be technical, but actually, either they've got some coding skills already or sort of technically minded. I do think there's a massive opportunity. You know, women are so underrepresented in this space. Like if you look at sort of female devs anyway, they're very much in the minority. And so in Web3, it's quite extreme. I don't think I even have any data on it, but I can tell by the amount of people that get in touch with us saying, have you got any female devs that Solidity. But yeah, I do think there are massive opportunities if you can code, and presumably people can also earn quite well. That's the other reason I sort of encourage women to do it.
And it's a pretty flexible career. So if you've got caring responsibilities, often a career in coding allows you to be pretty flexible around those, which is another great reason for women to get involved.
And speaking of the smart contracts, I guess that also kind of aligns quite well with MDRX having a law background or being spun out of a law firm. I wanted to ask you a bit about the legal side of things. So obviously, Web3 changes literally by the day, and it can be quite legally confusing because everything's so new. Are there any interesting developments that you've seen, whether like in your own work or elsewhere?
Yeah, definitely. And you're right to mention that being part of the Mishcon de Rea group, we have access to many, many lawyers, which most businesses do not. So we're lucky that we have that USP, and all of the tech that we build is compliant by design. And we have access to leading lawyers in every area of law. So we're spoilt. But as you said, that is not the case for a lot of businesses building in this space or new businesses starting up, especially launching products in this area. So I guess our approach to that, and then I'll come on to the things that we're finding interesting or keeping a watching brief on, is that to take a sort of risk-based approach to the compliance requirements in this space. And that is not least because they are changing so regularly, as you say. So if you spent a lot of time trying to learn and understand the letter of the law today, as I'll talk about, the regulatory environment is changing really quickly, so that might be out of date tomorrow. So we tend to encourage our clients and our own teams to focus on the legal risks associated with Web3 projects, and that could be themes that we're familiar with. So things like security, procurement, which you mentioned much earlier, human error, consumer protection or reputational risks. So all of those risks still apply in a Web3 context. And then there are new regulations and a changing regulatory environment, which is also relevant to this space. So understand what those risks are, keep a watching brief on them, and have a mitigation plan for them in the same way that you would for any risks associated with a business or product. Having said that, you asked about things that are particularly interesting and developments that are ongoing at the moment. We've been watching and actually been involved with some of the work that's been going on with the UK government to improve the law in this space and accommodate digital assets in law. One really interesting area is the work that's being done by the Law Commission. So they've done some work around property rights when it comes to digital assets. Sarah Green and her team have been asking the question of whether you can have a property right with a digital asset, and the consultation consultation that they put out has proposed a new third type of asset class, which is much more nuanced and appropriate to digital assets. And I'm pleased that Sarah Green's team have just started another piece of work on DAOs as well. And I think it's down to that work and others that the UK is really seen as a leader when it comes to setting the global standard for law in this space. There's also been some interesting work recently with HM Treasury. So they've been looking at, and actually spurred on by the collapse of FTX. So we talked about brutal terms. I think there's also been some brutal collapses in the last year or so. And they've been looking at the opportunity to apply regulation and regulatory requirements based on where the geographic location of users, as opposed to the location of the entity. And all of these things will, I think, help people feel more comfortable in adopting these technologies and using these technologies in their businesses. So it's great to see the UK leading in this space, and great for our business that we can combine both that legal advice and technology delivery. I think there are obviously still times when this goes wrong. I was just looking at some stats, and I think it was 14 billion US dollars were stolen in 2021 in terms of crypto assets. The work MDR's doing, Rebecca Belgrave and team working to trace and recover those assets, which is more complicated in some cases when they are digital assets, is something that is a global endeavor in order to try and improve the protection when it comes to people, especially when things go wrong.
That does sound interesting, the idea of recovering, hopefully, $14 billion worth of crypto assets. That's mad.
Yeah, it's a huge amount, isn't it? It's even I was shocked when I saw that it's quite at that scale. And then when you combine that with what we were talking about earlier on, about people feeling like they're not sure about adopting the technology or don't understand it, I think it's really critical that we address these issues. Otherwise, we won't see adoption grow in the way that a lot of people in this space want to see it grow.
Yeah, I completely agree. I was asked a question about that a couple of days ago and at an event, and I felt like I really fudged the answer. That I don't think I really reassured them that actually about the sort of transparency and security of blockchain because of the examples of how money can be siphoned off like this. But it's because I don't know the particulars of how to hack a blockchain that I was kind of feeling out of my depth. And yeah, I think I do still want to give people that reassurance. Having said that, I think sometimes it's because it is still so new that there is this slightly Wild West effect. In the same way as in the early days of the internet, think about how many pop-ups and awful user experience that was then. And also, yeah, easy to get scammed or, viruses in your computer, which now sounds so retro, getting a virus. God, I remember being told that as a teenager to not click on things for that reason.
I know. And the amount spent on keeping your antivirus up to date.
Oh my God. Yeah. Norton antivirus.
Yeah. And the pop-ups, but even for that were always so frustrating.
Yeah. I saw a screenshot of the sort of ye olde internet. And it was just literally so many, what do you even call them? Sort of browser bars within the browser window that's filling up most of the screen. And then beyond that, still more pop-ups on top of that. So if we've managed to get through that with Web 1.0, and hopefully we can do the same with Web 3.0 and kind of get to a smoother experience.
Yeah, I'm sure we can. And like I said, I think in the UK, we're in a great position to do so with so many of our legal experts leading the thinking in this space.
Totally. I feel like I can't do this podcast anymore without talking about generative AI because it's so on everybody's minds at the moment. Are you getting many client requests to do with AI, either on the sort of digital transformation piece, or what kind of thing are people asking you what business is looking to do?
Yes, definitely. And compared to Web3, I actually think that this is a more accessible technology. Business leaders seem less afraid of it. They can go and play with it. The UI on ChatGPT, for instance, is something that you can sign up for in seconds and actually experience generative AI for yourself in a way that we don't see people adopting Web3 technology day to day. So we're talking to businesses a lot about how they can use generative AI to enhance their businesses. And the same principles apply that we would use when we're talking about Web3. So it has to be part of what the business is trying to achieve strategically. It should not be an add-on or technology for technology's sake, which I know is something Women of Web3 talks about a lot. And making sure that even if they are experimenting with these technologies, they are doing that intentionally. They aren't launching new products and services and then leaving them. And they're thinking about what impact the new services can have on their consumers. AI, I think, is going to be a technology that we see a lot in business transformation, being able to speed up processes, being able to realize efficiencies. And I have to say, the one part of this which I don't feel too worried about actually is the idea that this is, you know, doing all of those efficiencies is going to take our jobs. And I actually think it would be fantastic if we can use generative AI to enhance people's jobs so that they can focus on the innovative and creative parts of their roles in the workplace and enhance the amount of value that can be achieved there. Really, I think in that situation, helping businesses to reduce their bottom line and find some efficiencies.
Yeah, I'm totally on the same page. I am, though saying that, I was having a conversation the other day where I was saying, I am actually a little bit worried about AI and job losses, but I'm only worried about it in the short term of like, I think there probably will be some job losses in terms of like some things can be automated and in a way should be automated. Doesn't necessarily need a human to do it if it can be done automatically, you know, sort of instantly. Yes, I think there'll be some growing pains with that. People probably will lose their jobs, I think probably in the space of this year, in the space of 2023, but there will also be so many more jobs created and just sort of this big shift in business. So, you know, businesses are shifting obviously enormously post-pandemic anyway and a bit more nimble and still kind of working out what the new normal is. Now they're kind of being given steroids or a sort of bucket of coffee to speed everything up and make everything a bit smoother. Yeah, there is this kind of big shakeout happening, but I am, yeah, definitely confident and excited for what that means in terms of job creation. And you're right, people spending time doing the more exciting or fun bits of our jobs from, I think, probably from like next year. Well, you know, some people will already start experiencing that now.
Yeah, I think it'd be interesting to see how the job market reacts to that, with the job market, especially in technology, being so hot at the moment. It'd be interesting to see whether we see a natural cooling off, but there are still plenty of jobs available. That's my hope anyway. Mm. And yeah, I share your excitement for the future of what this means for job creation.
Mm. I also think that lots of companies are having a think at the moment, or I would say actually a panic about what their approach is in terms of using some of this technology internally and kind of what their policy on it is. So, you know, some big corporates are banning the use of, sorry, not the use of ChatGPT, but of sharing company data into something like that or Google Bard, which I understand. I understand the motivation for that. But yeah, they're having to sort of quickly come up with these policies or what they're doing. Or even I was covering a little bit about AI in a talk that I gave recently for a big corporate. And I was asked to kind of chop it right back, actually, because they weren't decided what their approach to AI and things like ChatGPT, they weren't sure what their approach was yet. And so they were basically kind of removing it from the conversation, which I think is almost more dangerous.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that you, in any business, if when you're leading, trying to shut things down in that way, you just get people experimenting in a more dangerous way than if you can provide them with some guide rails to make use of the technology. I mean, I guess it's easy to do in a business like ours, but giving people space to innovate and try things out with the technologies that they're excited about is often a really good way to come up with new ideas.
Mm. I even heard someone saying on a podcast, I think she runs her own little like small agency. She was saying that she, actually a bit like Google used to, or maybe still do, offer, is it so 10 or 20% of people's time to be working on kind of innovation and like new projects, that she gives people a portion of their time to just be going and like playing with AI tools to sort of essentially go and search out which one of these things should we be using and like bringing into the business that all of us can make use of it. And I think that's really smart. That's a very good use of people's time, that they feel like they've got the freedom to kind of go and learn this stuff. You know, it's beneficial to them. And then it also helps the businesses make decisions about, you know, what technology should we start using. And I don't know, I thought that was a really smart idea.
Yeah, and we sort of building on that, have Slack channels where people share the sorts of things they're experimenting with, so that that actually becomes learning throughout the business rather than just, you know, the individual who's gone and had a play in their spare time. They actually add value by telling others about it too.
I love that. So to finish things off, so we always make sure that every episode is really actionable for our community. So do you have any top tips to share, whether it's kind of places to go and learn more or your own biggest learning frameworks to use, anything like that?
So I think I'll build on the point that we've just been talking about, which is trying these things out, trying these technologies out in your spare time, finding products that you can sign up to, setting up your own wallet. I'm not recommending investing loads of money on things, but actually going and having a play with some emerging technology. I think it we often are worried about putting ourselves out there, and actually just, you know, getting onto a few Discord channels, having a chat with some people. And I would say, rather than recommending a single voice to follow or listen to, try and listen to a few, because I think sometimes you can almost get a bit of groupthink through the creators that you are engaging with. So I have a bit of an approach of falling down Web3 rabbit holes. So whether that starts on Discord or YouTube or through links on CoinDesk or The Block, and just follow links in articles and have a and see what you find. And I think try and take that away and have that conversation with others as well. I think a really great way to learn and come up with new ideas in this space or learn about this space is to be brave enough to talk about it and maybe say once in a while something that isn't right or someone can improve on. But that's a great way that I find to learn, and something that I'm always doing at MDRX in terms of talking to our teams about what tech they are excited about and they're playing with.
I think that's what people value in our events or broader Web3 events, is exactly that. It was like building on that learning, talking about it out loud with other humans, and it sort of cements it in your head and makes sense of it, and you kind of go, okay, yeah, I get it, and here's why I'm excited about it. So lastly, Sian, where can people find you?
So you can look for us online, find our website. There's loads of case studies and information about the services that we've got there, plus a careers page, so you can find out what roles we've got open. You can also look for us, MDRX, on LinkedIn, and it'd be great to hear from some of your listeners.
Amazing. Well, I've really enjoyed our conversation, so thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Women of Web3 podcast. If you've liked this episode, please do give us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from. It really helps more people find the show. Check out our website, womenofweb3.co, to find our talent collective you can apply to be part of, or post your Web3 vacancies on our jobs board. If you've got any questions or comments, just tweet us at womenofweb3co, and we'll see you next Thursday morning.